Hello, welcome to the True Faith free podcast post-Chelsea. Newcastle United unfortunately lost 1-0 at Stamford Bridge yesterday. I'm Charlotte Robson, joined by Norman Riley and Sean Orrick. We were all there. We are all going to discuss the result and the game and the fixture and where that puts us. Well, it puts us back in the relegation zone, unfortunately. Norman, I'll come to you first. We'll talk about that straight away. Back in the relegation zone, do you think we've shown enough so far with our, I think, 9 matches now to get out of it? Do you think we have shown enough, more than lesser sides, shall we say?
It's so difficult to answer that question based on all 9 games collectively, because we've been absolutely atrocious in some of them. Watford at home, Brighton at home, Leicester away, Arsenal at home. We were really, really poor, and Norwich away as well. And if I was asked to judge on those 5 performances alone, I would say that we're, you know, a dead cert for relegation. And after the Leicester game, I was convinced that we were going to go down with a whimper, you know. But obviously, that performance against Man U with a tactical change, that lifted everything. And you could see that the players themselves visibly yesterday looked like their heads were a little bit higher. And they looked a lot more confident. And obviously, we know that Chelsea dominated the game in terms of possession and chances created. But at the same time, we were in the game all the way through. And at the end of the match, the players didn't look dejected. They came over and they were applauding the fans. And they knew that they hadn't humiliated themselves. And yesterday's performance, the Man U performance and the Spurs away performance, they're the kind of performances that have been the hallmark of our first 2 seasons back in the Premier League. And if we can continue performing in a similar vein, then I think we've got enough. The issue is, obviously, is that I think under Bruce, unlike under Rafa, we are going to take some absolute tankings. And it's how we kind of recover from those tankings. Whether those absolutely, you know, those results have a huge impact on the confidence and we carry it in the next game. It's a kind of case of if you lose 3 or 4-0, we've got to get over it straight away. And to be fair, you know, the Leicester defeat 5-0, they did get over it. And I think that's what's important. That, look, we've had a really tough start. We've played 5 of your kind of, you know, traditional top 6 sides in the opening 9 games. The only one we're missing really is Man City. Obviously, you know, you can say Man U are on a top 6 side at the moment, but they're not. But in terms of them being traditionally there, that's what they are. The big one is getting results against the teams around us. That's where we need to start picking up points. Now, I would consider Wolves at the moment as one of those teams that we ought to be looking to pick up a victory against at home. And I've seen enough in the last 2 games to give me hope, a lot more hope than I had post Leicester. I think actually we've been excellent in different ways against Man U and Chelsea. So I'm hopeful right now. I'm hopeful. But again, you know, ask me the same question after the Wolves match and we'll see where we're at.
Sean, anything to add to that?
No, I think I pretty much agree with a lot of what Norman said. I think the only difference is when we play some of the so-called, you know, the so-called lesser sides, we have to try and be on the front foot a bit more, and that brings with itself its own risks. And we're not, at the moment, creating enough chances. I mean, we'll come on to a bit about the game, and that's a lot of it, but we're going to have to take more risks, which then again leaves us a bit more open. I don't think against the lesser sides we can just sit back and be organised and play on the break, which is where kind of our problems are going to maybe lie. But, you know, Norman is right in terms of we've had a reaction. Me and Norman were both at Leicester. It was absolutely horrendous. But there has been a bit of a reaction there. We've kind of reset a bit. We've got a bit more organised. We've kind of, people know that look like they know the rules a bit better, which is, you know, is a lot of a progression from what we talked about a few weeks ago after that game. So we've kind of got the foundations and the base there. But again, it's going to be, what can we do when we have the ball on the front foot against those sides? And that's going to kind of decide where we finish, really.
Absolutely. I think, we're only different to Southampton on goal difference. Mm. And I think that's what we're going to come on to next. What is the problem here? Why can't we score any goals? Our defence, which we'll talk about definitely later on in this podcast, was pretty solid and pretty admirable yesterday. I think that side of things is fairly sorted, if you will. But our problem here is we're not scoring any goals, we're not creating any chances at all. Norman, let's talk about Joel Linton. Gale's back to fitness, kind of. He came on for about 15 minutes yesterday. Do you think he's going to be a better option once he's sort of ready to start, or do you think Carroll, I guess Carroll's not going to be full fitness for a full match either. What do you think? What's the answer here? Give us the answer, please.
God, I wish I had it. I mean, look, the big issue is that ultimately we lost Rondon and Perez in the summer. That's 25 Premier League goals gone. And, you know, you're looking at basically to replace those goals, you're looking at Maximan, Almiron, Joe Linton, Gail and Carroll. Now, unfortunately, I don't believe any of those players have got the goal scoring capabilities of those two players that we lost. So, in terms of getting enough goals, it's really difficult to know where to look. I mean, look, Dwight Gayle played under Rafa in the Premier League for a full season. He got 6 goals. Dwight Gayle's goal scoring record in the Premier League is, you know, it's not good. He's an incredible championship goal scorer. He's one of those players who's too good for the championship, yet possibly not quite good enough to bag 10 goals and 10 goals in the Premier League. At the moment, would he offer more of a goal threat than Joe Linton? It's difficult to say because what's happening is, you know, you can't really say Joe Linton's not scoring goals because he's not a good finisher. The reality is he's just not getting chances. Now, my concern would be if we swap Joe Linton for Dwight Gayle, is Dwight Gayle going to start creating chances on his own? Dwight Gayle, is he going to? No, cheers for that, Alex. Is Dwight Gayle going to start creating chances on his own? Because at the moment, the only way that you can see Joe Linton score is if he basically picks up the ball in the halfway line and he drives forward on his own. There is absolutely nothing coming. San Maximan yesterday did offer a little bit of hope because there was a couple of occasions where obviously he broke free and you're just looking for that kind of final ball. You're looking for the movement of Joe Linton into space. Now, at the moment, I don't think Joe Linton quite understands how to utilise the space on the counter as well as Rondon did, as well as Perez did. That's what they were really good at. They were really good at kind of movement off the ball and just being in the right place at the right time. And Joe Linton doesn't quite understand that yet. And it's probably down to the fact that he doesn't understand the English game, the fact that Bruce's tactics have been up and down since day one. Hopefully now we're getting into a place where, you know, there's going to be a consistent tactical setup on the pitch. But as Sean says, we need to go on the front foot. It's how we do that. Sorry, Charlotte, you wanted to say something there.
Oh, no, I was going to say, actually, I was standing with Norman for the game, and Norman was pointing out that Joe Linton, he comes very deep, so when we do get the ball on the break, there's three players in front of him. That happened quite a few times, didn't it, Norman?
Yeah, it did, and that's the thing. So I think what would happen is, obviously, you bring Gayle in, Joe Linton, and I think it's quite obvious that he's desperate to be involved in the game, and he's a young player as well. He's relatively inexperienced if you actually look at the games he's played at this stage of his career. And his sort of keenness to show what he can do is probably, on a subconscious level, making him just come back and try and make himself available. Whereas I think Gayle, obviously, with his experience, he would just know, hang on the halfway line, if we break, I need to be ready to go. So, you know, I can see the advantage of bringing Gayle in. But, you know, part of me thinks that would be really harsh on Joe Linton. I think the problem I've got is that Joe Linton, look, there's something there. There's definitely talent there, but he doesn't have that one thing that's, you know, magical that means that he's good enough to operate in a team where he's not getting chances given all the time. So I think in order to accommodate him, ultimately the team needs to change how it attacks. And games away to Chelsea, you're not going to see that. It's Wolves. The next game against Wolves, I would start with Joe Linton, but we need the team to start on the front foot. And obviously, two or three games down the line, if he's not scoring, then it's a case of saying, well, look, his confidence has obviously been affected. Maybe we do need to make the change. But I think, you know, one thing about yesterday was it was good to have the option of bringing Dwight Gayle on. It was good to be able to bring Andy Carroll on. I don't think we can start matches with Andy Carroll, but he's a fantastic option from the bench. It's such a difficult question to answer with Joe Linton because, as I say, there is something there, but he's not getting the opportunity to show it, so his inexperience is telling. Against Wolves, I'd probably start with him, but if by half-time, if it's not looking good, then we can bring Gayle off the bench.
Sean, what do you think of that? How are you a big Gayle fan? Do you want to see him start? What's your take?
It's going to take time with Joe Linton. I think it's whether we have that time and have that luxury. We are kind of a side full of players who aren't regular goal scorers. You look from midfield, where are the goals coming? Shelby's never scored goals, particularly the two long staffs at the minute, or just new to the game. They've not got a history of getting a lot of goals, and it's going to take a lot of goals because if you don't get those goals from up front, you need to find them from somewhere else. And kind of the way Joe Linton plays at the moment, I think, like Norman said, it's a symptom of how Bruce sets up and ways he plays his back to goal for a lot of the game. He shoulders a lot of the work. He's an outlet for us. But we're not. He's not one where you play balls over the top. So, I mean, probably going to have to be a case where you need to get maybe the two wide players playing a bit closer to him at times and just giving him a little bit of support. I think it was...
Yeah, there wasn't...
It was a bit telling yesterday. I think Almirón maybe wasn't having any joy against Alonso for quite a lot of the time, but why didn't they switch? Especially when Alonso got booked. Switch him over, get ASM on, really get at him. I just think we need to be a bit more dynamic there and think a little bit more when we're trying to help each other out, because there is definitely a player there. I think we do have to give the lad a bit of time. I think he's got a great touch. I think he did bring players in the game a little bit yesterday. But when we start having to go at teams, he's going to have to be looking forward. He can't really shoulder all this himself. He looked quite isolated yesterday at times.
Sorry, yeah, no, he did. He looked very isolated. You're right. I think it's going to be a problem. And like you say, time is what we need. We need time for this team to bed in together. We need time for sort of... We just need time and we don't really have it.
that's it. I mean, look, in an ideal world, you're bringing in this kid from Germany on big money who, you know, he didn't score a load of goals at Hoffenheim, but there's obviously talent there. I mean, you know, Nagelsmann played him, and Nagelsmann's an excellent, excellent manager. Hoffenheim were a good side. He scored goals in the Austrian league. I mean, you know, I don't know what that tells you, but there is something there. But he's come in to a side in flux because of everything that went on in the summer with Rafa, and he's come in and he's had to replace Salomon Rondon, who had, you know, by the end of last season, 4 years' experience in the Premier League. You know, a regular international footballer and somebody who scored enough goals and gave enough off the ball to be an extremely, an exceptionally valuable player on that side. And Joe Linton's having to come in and perform that role himself and also, to a certain extent, perform part of Ayoze Perez's game because, you know, Maximan isn't a direct replacement for Ayoze Perez. He's a completely different type of player. And Almirón at the moment, Almirón's confidence is so low in terms of getting in front of goal and taking a risk. He's scared. I still think he's offering a lot. Now, yesterday he did offer a little bit. His movement was pretty good. Sean makes a really good point, actually. I think the moment that Alonso was booked, you say, Sean, switch Maximan and Almirón, because then you're really going to give Alonso problems, because Maximan just draws fouls, as we saw yesterday. And, you know, the potential for Alonso getting a second yellow would have been there, but, you know, it wasn't to be. However... Yeah, Joe Linton, he's just having to shoulder a lot of burden at the moment, and I don't necessarily think that he's such a superb footballer that he can do that. I think he's a very good footballer, but he's a footballer who needs time and he needs an example, you know, like an older player in training maybe, kind of leading him along. He needs micromanage coaching, specific coaching, and he's not obviously not going to get that, and I think that's going to be what hinders him. And it's a real shame, because I think there is a good player, and it's just at the moment he's not being given what he needs to improve and to become a success.
I think the Dwight Gayle question as well is that a little bit, and I've seen this on Twitter. I mean, there was a lot of talk on Twitter yesterday, like very, very negative stuff. And I don't think overall, and we can talk about the overall performance, I don't think overall it was a bad performance. I think there's a lot to take from it. And there was a lot of negativity on Twitter yesterday. Well, there always is. It's a cesspit. But, I mean, a lot of people on Twitter were saying, oh, we're really missing Matt Ritchie here. You can really see that we're missing Matt Ritchie here. And I think it's just a weird, like, not the Dwight Gayle thing as much, because we did see him come on and we know that he's a dynamic player and that, you know, on the break he could offer us some opportunity. But I think it's just this kind of, I don't know if scapegoating's the right word, but like, oh, this is only happening because we don't have X, Y, Z. Anyway, that's just my little.
I think that's a really good point, and I don't think Matt Ritchie would have changed that game at all yesterday. I mean, you know, Ritchie does give us something different on the left hand side when he's playing wing back than other players. But you know, that Jethro Williams yesterday for me didn't do anything wrong. I thought he was actually quite good. You know, one thing that Ritchie could bring, I guess, is when you bring Andy Carroll on, Ritchie can't put a ball into the box. You know, and you think, well, maybe he would have whipped a couple in that Carroll could have challenged for. But you know, ifs, buts, and maybes. I don't know if we're going to go into a kind of summary of the overall performance, but you know, the performance yesterday for me, if that performance had happened under Rafa, I wouldn't have left the ground disappointed. I didn't leave the ground disappointed. Yes, I said, look, the template that we used yesterday was a template that was used under Rafa. You know, you go away to these big sides, you try and keep it tight, you try and limit the chances that they have. I mean, you know, I don't think under Rafa Chelsea would have created as many clear-cut chances as they did. I mean, Dubravka pulled off some outrageous saves, back to his best, by the way, yesterday.
I'd like to do a 20-minute segment on Dubravka, please.
Well, yeah, we'll get into that. Me and Sean will just leave and you can do a monologue. The performance, yes, as I say, they probably created too many chances. That wouldn't have necessarily happened under Rafa. But at the same time, this is one of those games where you're thinking, right, we haven't been battered, we haven't been humiliated, we haven't lost any confidence from it, we can move on. It's not a disastrous result. It's a defeat, yes, so there's 0 points for it, but it's not like a 3-0 or 4-0 battering, you know. This is the kind of defeat that under Rafa we kind of got to, you know. If you look at Spurs away, you look at Man City away, they were always narrower. We didn't create many chances, but we didn't get humiliated, and that's what it was for me yesterday. So I don't think any player we started with yesterday would have impacted necessarily on that scoreline. It would have been a very similar performance, I think.
I agree, and it's also worth noting, and we did note on our Patreon preview, that Chelsea are a really high scoring side so far this season. They have scored a lot of goals. I don't have the number to hand, but it's something like 14 or 15 goals. And yesterday they only got one past us. Yeah. Like, that's something to take away from.
They concede loads of goals, but we'll not talk about that.
They do concede loads of goals. We mentioned that on the preview as well, and I was like, yeah, but we can't score any. Anyway, we'll move on. We'll talk about the day, and then we can have a little bit of a match recap as well. So, Norman, you say Chelsea away is one of the worst fixtures.
Yeah.
Why? How was your day? How was your day generally? And why do you think it's so bad?
The day was fantastic because I got to spend it with magnificent people, obviously. Yeah. Chelsea itself, I mean, you know, the stadium's basically a shopping centre and a multi-storey car park. It's horrible. You know, it is just horrible. It's a truly repulsive, horrible place. And also, as you walk through the back streets of Chelsea itself, like, you just, as I mentioned before, you get a real feel for, like, the inequalities in London. You know, there's, like, it is just literally, like, millionaires walking around with those tiny little, you know, designer dogs. And then, obviously, you know, five minutes down the road, you've got, like, you know, Grenfell. It's a horrible, horrible place. It's a visual representation of British social inequality. So, on a political level, I can't stand it. Also, the pubs are disgustingly overpriced. When people complain about London beer prices, I always say, well, you know, this, you're choosing to drink here. But the reality is, going into, like, a borough like Chelsea or even anywhere kind of past Victoria, you're in your right mind. You know, you're in your right mind to complain. It is ridiculous. But yesterday, you know, I thought the away fans were great yesterday. I thought that was a really positive away end, apart from some idiots shouting the occasional stupid comment. On the whole, the fans were brilliant, in good voice. We didn't sell out, and the tickets didn't go on public sale, which I thought was a bit strange. But the atmosphere in general was good, and we didn't see any bother outside of Chelsea, which was nice, you know. It was one of those where we drank at Victoria, we got to the ground, and then after the match, we just headed straight out to Chelsea again.
Yeah,
and we ended up in, so we ended up in the back streets of Waterloo, drinking in a cracking boozer called the King's Arms. Really, really good day. Apart from the result, a good day, but not too disheartened by the performance.
Sean, how was your experience of the day and the away end?
I thought the away end was in fantastic voice. I think, you know, it was a tough game. We're often on the back foot, and I think we really backed the lads. It was brilliant. I think I'll give one redeeming feature of the ground. I think unless you're stuck at the very back of the lower tier of the shed end, you do tend to get quite a good view. It's very steep, so you're kind of bunched in a corner. And I think it does lend itself to generating a lot of noise, which I think does certainly help. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people listening have been the away end at the Emirates, for instance, which is quite flat and just genuinely a shit stadium, and it's very hard to generate any noise. Now, Chelsea fans didn't really make any noise, but we more than made up for that. And we're absolutely brilliant.
Oh my God, the Chelsea fans, literally.
Oh, hey.
Well, honestly, at one point, you know, there's that sort of everybody shushing, and there wasn't a peep from anyone at Chelsea. The only time I heard them make any noise was when they scored.
Yeah, and then they've got the ball boys with the flags when they scored as well. It's not even the fans. Like, their home crowd yesterday was so abysmal. Like, this whole thing about Frankie being one of our own, Frank Lampard, all this hero worship around him, you know, the banners on the stadium, JT, Captain Nita legend, they missed off the racist part, but they were awful, they were so silent. And the reality is, Chelsea's a football club, it's like 9,000 hardcore fans and then 30,000 tourists, that is Chelsea. So that's why there's no atmosphere. It's one of those where you think, like, you know, if they were in like the Championship and they were getting attendances of 11,000, which is their natural level, really, they'd probably have a lot better atmosphere. But it was so pathetic. I mean, they were dominating the game as well, yet the fans still weren't in voice. It was almost like, yeah, we won't sing to encourage you. You have to score for us to sing. That's the kind of attitude that it was yesterday. And even when they scored, it was quite literally 2 minutes of them piping up, and then they just shut up again. And even at the end of the match, it was more kind of mild applause. And the reality is,
yeah, it is. It's polite applause, isn't it?
They performed really well. They've got so much going for them on the football pitch in terms of their players. Like, you know, they've got some brilliant players. We'll go into. I'm sure we'll go into individual players on their team, but they've got a lot to cheer about. Like, it's almost like with the youngsters that they've got coming through, they're kind of clawing back a little bit of their soul as a football club, as opposed to what they have been for the last 15 years under Abramovich, which is just a big spending vacuum vacuum and monstrosity of a club. But because they've got these youngsters coming through with them in the academy, that I hate to say it, but there's actually something quite likeable about the half the team. Ugh, I feel bad saying that.
You'll have to have a shower after this.
A bath with a toaster.
All right, well, Sean, I'll come to you. We'll talk about our side and Chelsea's side, but I just wanted to know your opinion on our players. Who stood out for you? I guess we'd be remiss not to mention how good our defence was yesterday, our back four, and my beloved Dubravka. Who was your standout?
I'll let you go with Dubravka. I don't want to take away the kind of the glory of that one, but he was brilliant yesterday. I thought Lascelles had a really good game yesterday. In fact, they all did. Were under the cosh for quite a lot of the time, and all he can ask is for everyone to just put their all in and be organised, and they did that. I think first half, ASM was exciting. The few times he got on the ball, it was a genuinely edge of your... Well, I'd say edge of your seat, but no one sits in away games. But, you know, it really got you off your feet. It was exciting. He went past players and he goes at players. And the way they were shit scared of him. He faded a bit in the second half, but I think that was just the nature of how the game went. But that's a real positive for us. And when we talked earlier about kind of how we're going to get something out of some of the lesser teams, he's going to be a big factor in doing that and playing on the front foot. So the glimpses that I saw of him, I thought, were really positive. I think I'd certainly take that away.
Yeah, encouraging. Yeah. And then Norman, I'll come to you with the same question. But, you know, Sean mentioned there that we really were pressed. I think in the second half, for a good 15, 20 minutes before that goal, our defensive back, well, it was all being played in their third. Like, we had sort of... The pressure was so much...
Yeah.
On us,
yeah.
and you kind of could see a goal coming. It was just relentless. But any shout outs for our players who impressed you yesterday?
Shea, Lascelles and Clark were superb. Kieran Clark, I mean, fair play to him coming back in the side against Man U, having not featured at all this season. He's been rock solid in both games. And I think Yedlin, to be honest, coped incredibly well, given that he was pretty much up against Alonso and Hudson-Odoi on his own. We noticed it in the first half, especially the amount of space they had on the left-hand side was unreal. And Yedlin, the poor lad, I mean, he was working and working and working. And don't get me wrong, I'll go into a little Hudson-Odoi love in now. He was so, so good, Hudson-Odoi. His movement, his strength, his skill, he was just brilliant. Like, what a brilliant, brilliant player. And a player who's not even a regular for them. I mean, if we could bring somebody through with that talent, it would be lovely to see. He's the kind of player that, like, if he was at Newcastle, he would become an absolute legend. He's the kind of player that, like, you know, I think as a fan of Newcastle, we absolutely love. So I would even, you know what, moving on to Newcastle players, the long step with us to a certain extent impressed me. Yes, they didn't have much of the ball, but the energy was superb. And also, what we noticed in the first half, Jorginho was just being allowed to dictate. He was just dictating the game. The space that he had was ridiculous. Everything was coming through him. And I think we were speaking at one point, like, it can't continue like this because somebody needs to pick up on the fact that Jorginho is just getting the ball constantly, everything's coming to him. And to be fair, they did. He quietened down towards the end of the first half. His influence on the game was completely negated. And they were doing really well. They started doing really well. And then Barkley going off, that changed the dynamic again, because Kovacevic came on and he was absolutely superb. He completely changed the dynamic. I honestly think, and I think I said to you at one point, that we've nullified them now. They're running out of ideas already towards the end of the first half. And as soon as I made that change, again, the dynamic of the team, the dynamic of their team changed. And what happened was then it brought Tammy Abraham into the game a lot more. As I say, Kovacevic was
very
excellent.
Very tall man.
Yeah. Oh, God, absolutely. He's very tall, Tammy Abraham. He looked like... The thing is, he's one of those players, you always think, oh, he's dead slight, but then the past three seasons, you know, we saw him at Bristol City when we were in the Championship. He's only 19, he's 22 now. Of course he's going to fill out, of course he's going to bulk up, and he is a very, very big player, and a really good player as well. Again, as good as Shea, Lascelles and Clark were, it was very much a case of like watching a rugby match when they're defending on the line, you know what I mean? It was like, there was just this mass rank of defence, and Chelsea trying to push through, and I think Abraham's touch for the Chelsea goal was really good, but it's difficult. We played well, our players played well, most of the team played well, but they just played that bit better and they had that bit more quality, and that's what obviously undone us in the end, you know.
And I think as well, we were fairly evenly matched, at least in the first half, and then the second half they came out, like you say, they made the switch, and we just didn't sort of rise up to meet them at that level, I don't think.
No. It's difficult, isn't it? It's going to be difficult when, you know, when they can bring off the bench, you know, somebody from Real Madrid who's going to cost you 60 million quid. They can bring Pulisic off the bench, close to 60 million quid. You know, they've got Giroud on the bench. Giroud would walk into Newcastle's team, you know? I mean, this is the difference. It was the same thing under Rafa as well. You know, we've got... when the players are on song, when the defences defend the way it is, when the midfielders are working as hard as they are, we can give everyone a game, but ultimately other teams have that little bit of quality that if we aren't 100% on it for the whole game, they can take advantage of it. And that's what happened for the goal ultimately. Bruce was talking about Joe Linton being fouled in the build-up. I didn't see anything that looked like a foul there, to be honest. Abraham's touch on Alonso was an absolutely class touch, and it's something difficult to defend against. You could argue that Alonso was in too much space, but even then, his finish was spectacular, and his finish had to be spectacular because Dubravka was in such good form, and Dubravka actually almost got it. So it's just the lack of that piece of quality that stymies us.
It's the lack of choice. We don't have the choice.
Exactly.
We don't have these players on the bench that we can look to and think, oh, well, we can change the entire formation and style of play, like at 65 minutes. We just don't have that.
Absolutely.
So
all we've got is just lump the ball up to Big Andy. That's it.
Big Andy or Big Joe. Yeah. Sean?
I did think second half it was quite telling that, you know, you've got two very young lads in the centre of midfield, you've done a lot of work, and second half I didn't see Shelby Woman at once or anyone who could potentially come on and change it and maybe relieve one of them. I think, you know, it was a very tough afternoon for them, but
you
saw him in the first half warming up, but then there was not even a consideration that he might come on in the second half and start playing some balls in, and, you know, we bring Andy Carroll on, and there wasn't any kind of thought that they might need to meet someone to relieve them a little bit.
Yeah, that for me highlights the lunacy and ostracising Key. That was ideal. It was ideal for Key to come on yesterday for one of the long staffs, whoever Bruce thought was the most tired, perhaps. That would have been ideal for Key, especially around about the sort of 65, 70 minute mark when it was still nils each. Key's the kind of player who could come on and he could just kind of settle things around and stroke the ball around the pitch a little bit and just possibly even slow Chelsea's attacking threat down. But he's been ostracised for whatever reason, so moot point talking about it, I guess.
I understand that.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Maybe we can do it.
Something internal at the club that we aren't privy to, I guess.
Well, we're gonna have to find out. We're going to have to do some sleuthing. All right, so we've talked a little bit about Chelsea, their setup, that they are able to, you know, change the game with one 60 million player if they want to. What do we need to score goals here? Do we need more long staffs? Do we need more Steves? Do we need more Steves, Norman? You talk a lot about Steve.
We don't need any more Steves. I mean, you know, there's a lot of Steves in the club at the moment, and, you know, you can always have too many Steves. You know, like a murder of crows. What do you think a Steve is? Yeah. Well, somebody said, no, was it a kebab of Steve's?
A disappointment.
A disappointment of Steve's. There you go. Yeah. Yeah, we don't need out of the disappointment of Steve's anymore. But what do we need? Oh, God. We need to create chances. We need to create chances. And that is what is absolutely hammering us at the moment. You know what it is? I do think, and Sean mentioned, obviously, ASM... tiring towards the end of the match, but the reality is that was only his second start, I think, so he's just getting back, he's getting to full fitness, you know, and I do think once ESM hits his stride, then he will, on him on his own, will generate chances. I think in home games, if Sean Longstaff's given the opportunity to get forward more, he's a potential outlet for creating chances. Amiron, you know, he doesn't create any direct chances, but when he's on form, he's running and his movement open up the space. Again, I'm going back to last season, open up the space that people like Perez and Rondon can exploit. And that's what we need. We need people like Joe Linton, ASM, to start exploiting the space when we're counter-attacking. And that's what, at the moment, what he did yesterday is we didn't counter-attack very well, because as we saw, ASM was running with the ball, and because Joe Linton dropped so deep, ASM was getting to the box and he had basically nothing to aim at to a certain extent. Or he's having to slow himself down to wait for the other players to catch up. So I guess... we need to, if we're going to be this counter-attacking side, we need to learn to get up and down the pitch with a lot more rapidity than we are at the moment. But, you know, I mean, I guess you could say, you know, we could do with another Steve in terms of a coach dedicated to attacking. I don't know if Clements or Agnew are necessarily those coaches. I mean, they were both midfielders as players. Bruce was a defender. Not that that necessarily has any impact on what you do as a coach, but... none of them seem to give the impression that they're actually focused on attacking alone. So maybe that is something, but I just start creating chances.
I wonder if yesterday, you know, seeing the defence being sort of solid, that the focus will be on attacking in training now. I mean, I don't know. I can't know. So. Do you think the answer is in our squad already, or do you think this needs, you know, scouting and money in January? Sean, what do you think?
I think we probably are going to have to spend money in January. Strength and depth definitely isn't there, but I think the worrying thing for me is we probably need a bit of luck, and that's not always something you can control. I think we do need a bit of luck to go. I think Almiron just needs one to go in, but I mean... we've been saying this for a long time now, and I don't know how long you can keep saying it, but I still do believe that if he gets one, he'll get a couple. And it's just that little bit of luck I think we are lacking a little bit. As the odd probably Norman mentioned, I totally agree with the fact that we need to be a little bit quicker getting out. I think the only very harsh criticism I'd give of Dubravka is maybe just ship the ball out as quick as you can.
That's
if we're
going to
be a counter-attacking team.
I won't hear it.
It's the only thing. That's the one thing. Right. But I think just... you know, decision making, we just need to get a bit quicker at that, because that's the way we're going to catch teams. But you have to do it at pace and you have to do it at speed.
Yeah.
So I think that is our main kind of issue. And it's some of these things, you know, you can't necessarily control. The luck thing would be nice. We historically don't really get it.
Yeah, Norman.
I'll add to that. You know what I do think is important is the possibility of Florian Lejeune coming back into the side. Because his quality on the ball, he can create attacking play from the back. Obviously, at the moment, you'd think, well, if Lejeune comes back, you'd have to drop either Clark or Lascelles, because they've both been brilliant. But ultimately, in a game against Chelsea, where Clark and Lascelles with Shea are ball playing centre off, okay. But at home matches, if you've got Shea and Lejeune as part of that back three, you're probably naturally going to create maybe one or two chances just because of Lejeune's vision, Lejeune's ability to, if you've got ESM and Almiron breaking forward at pace, if they're not sitting too deep, if you've got Yedlin back to full fitness with his ability to get up and down the line, and you've got Lejeune in there who's able to pick a really good pass on the toe into the right amount of space, then you think naturally we're going to create more chances. But I think obviously you make a good point, Charlotte, about the defence to a certain extent, it is so well drilled after 2 or 3 years under Rafa that it almost picks itself and gets on with the game on its own. You think to yourself how much input is actually needed on the training ground with these defenders. They just know what they're doing, and they know the game inside out. So maybe there is a necessity to focus on attacking in training. I mean, they might do already, we don't know, but you get the impression that that's not really the case at the moment. You get the impression that it's a case of, let's just be solid at the back and see what happens after that right now. But I think, yeah, Lejeune will make a difference. And you know what I'd love to see? What I'd really love to see, and it probably won't happen, is just go out and sign like a 25 or 26-year-old centre midfielder who is, you know, she's got that experience and he can create things. Like, as much as the Longstaffs are doing really well, I don't think those two are going to be, you know, the centre midfield pairing for the rest of the season. They will, either one of them is going to need to have a rest at some point. I don't think Shelby's the man to change things, because the side's dynamic changes completely when Shelby's in and it doesn't work. As we see, Key's been ostracised. Hayden shot himself in the foot with that lunacy at Leicester.
Yeah, that was terrible.
So going out and spending big money on a centre midfielder who can turn the ball over and create chances would be great. Whether that happens or not, who knows?
I mean, Steve Bruce is making the right noises about that, I think, when he talks. But again, I don't know that he's got really that much autonomy over who we might be looking at. I don't know. So you're saying that if we had Lejeune back, and Lejeune is back in training, you know, he's getting back to fitness, I think we'll see him on the bench, and if not at Wolves, maybe at West Ham. Do you think we do have I don't know if this is the right word. We do have some talent in the squad that can start scoring goals, or do you think we really do need to be really looking elsewhere, as in scouting?
I think we probably do need to be looking elsewhere. Sorry, I just jumped in there.
No,
we need to be looking elsewhere. I think just historically over a long season, we probably don't have enough players who score enough goals. And I think it is going to tell. So you're right, our goal difference isn't great already. I think that's a little bit of a concern. But we are going to really have to kind of start keeping games tight, and we're probably going to have to look to win games by the odd goal again. And I think that brings with itself its own risks, because it's difficult to keep doing that.
Yeah, I mean, my fear is that we're not going to score two goals in a single game this season. It's a genuine fear, because we just don't look capable of scoring two goals in a game. And you know, me seeing Florian Lejeune can make a difference is kind of, you know, clutching at straws a little bit, because Florian Lejeune is a centre half. He's not a centre forward. He's not a centre midfielder. He's a centre half. And you know, Florian Lejeune isn't going to create 20-25 goals that Ayoze Perez and Salomon Rondon brought to the side. What he'll do is he might make us a little bit better going forward because of his passing range. But at the same time, we still need players who can get on the end of crosses, players who can have enough of the ball to put crosses in, players who aren't sat too deep because the whole side is set up defensively. You know, we need to go on the front foot, and we need to, as Sean says, try and generate a bit of confidence. Like Almiron getting a goal, yes, it would be huge. But it's all, as I say, it's all ifs, buts and maybes at the moment. I think ultimately we just need, you know, or to have a Johan Gabay in that side from 7 years ago, you know, just to have somebody who can just unlock defences. And at the moment, we don't seem to have that. Tough, really tough. So if we don't make any signings at Christmas, then, as I say, scoring goals is going to be a big worry. And as Sean mentions, the goal difference as well. This was the thing. Under Rafa, we didn't score many goals. But my defensive record was ridiculous. I think it was like 6th and 7th best in the Premier League in those two seasons. So we could play that kind of risky game of looking not to concede and maybe taking that one chance that we get out of in a match. Under Steve Bruce, we're going to concede a lot more goals, and that could really hamstring us if we can't then score goals ourselves, you know.
And then finally, we will wrap this up. It's sort of getting into the why can't we score goals, just wails of sad fans. Does it worry you that we only had 30% possession yesterday? I mean that seems to be a common theme across our games. We can't seem to keep a hold of the ball. Sean?
It didn't worry me yesterday. I think that's totally understandable. Yesterday, Chelsea are a very good technical side. They keep the ball very well, and that was always going to be the case, I think. Having 25% possession against Brighton was more the concern. And it's how we kind of, you know, we've got some massive games coming up, especially home games. Bournemouth sticks out, Southampton, Palace, Burnley away coming up, Sheffield United away, Villa. These are the games we need to be picking up more points in, and I think we're going to need to have more of the ball against these teams. I don't think you can just play on the counter-attack of these teams. They won't let you do that. They know, and they want to do the same half of them because they're not that good. So that's more the concern. Yesterday, I think that's fine. that's the way we had to play yesterday, or would have got a real tank in. So, no, it's against the other side.
Yeah. Fair enough. Yeah. Norman?
Yeah, no, I agree. Possession yesterday, who cares? You know, it's away to Chelsea. 30%.
I suppose my main point there is more that that's a common theme. It's Chelsea, but like we're not getting a lot of possession in any of the games.
No, absolutely. But I mean, you know, you look at the possession stats on Rafa. It was pretty much the same. I think it was Rafa. Rafa said possession is a stat made up for TV. Now it's what you do when you've got the ball that counts. And at the moment, obviously, we're not doing enough as an attacking threat when we do have it. As Sean mentioned, yes, 25% of possession at home to Brighton. That's your concern. Don't get me wrong. We know that Brighton under Graham Potter, or a side that likes to hold on to the ball, but 25% is absolutely ridiculous at a home match against a side that is going to be around you at the bottom of the table. Wolves, I think, on Saturday next week, you'd like to think that we'll have more of the ball against Wolves. Yeah, on Sunday, we ought to have more of the ball against them. But again, even if we have 35% against Wolves, I don't care. It's what we do with the ball when we've got it. If we've got 35% of possession, but that 35% of possession is us generating 3 or 4 or 5 good chances, taking 1 or 2 of them, who cares? You know, right now, my concern, absolutely more than anything else, is the fact that we look very, very much incapable of scoring more than 1 goal every 2 games. That's the big worry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, agreed. And on that happy note, I think that we will probably wrap this podcast up. We have a Patreon. If you subscribe to our Patreon, it's around $7 a month. I think we do it in dollars. Exchange rate notwithstanding, it gives you access to 3 or 4 extra podcasts per week. Do have a look and subscribe if you're interested. We do all sorts of different things. We'll do a preview this week for the Wolves game. We have match day. Norman did the match day podcast yesterday at Stamford Bridge, and then we'll have loads of other extra stuff as well as sort of games and things like that for a bit of light-hearted, light relief, which I think we all need at the moment. So thank you very much for listening. We will be back next week.